This is Evercore Edge, Evercore's thought leader sharing insights on today's markets and events.
Welcome to Evercore Edge, where we explore the forces shaping global markets. I'm Mickey Haber, CEO of Evercore Private Capital Advisory. I'm joined today by three senior managing directors who see this market from distinct perspectives. Nigel Don, Global Head of Evercore Private Capital Advisory, David Markson, a leader on our LP advisory practice, and Ryan Roloff, a leader in our GP advisory practice. Today, we're diving into the secondaries market following publication of our 2025 secondary market report. Transaction volume topped $200 billion for the first time. We'll unpack what drove that growth, how LPs and GPs are using secondaries as strategic tools, and what's next as we look forward to 2026. Nigel, let's start with the big picture. 2025 was the second record-breaking year in a row. What were the key forces driving that scale, and what does it tell us about the role of secondaries within private capital?
Well, it's great to be here today first, Mickey, on Evercore Edge, excited to talk about this market. It was a record market, record volumes for the secondary market. And what's really driving that is a number of factors. The first factor is the lack of distributions that have been coming back to investors, which has meant that typically at the beginning of a year, if you have $100 of private equity, you get $25 in cash by the end of the year. Last year, it was $11. What's that meant for limited partners is they're being encouraged to sell their assets in the secondary market to generate liquidity so they can continue funding their program. I think second is we've seen new entrants come into the asset class with new funds, new capital has been very important. And perhaps a third factor, the growing importance of wealth management and retail in bringing new capital into the market. This has fueled the growth to $226 billion, which is a record, I think, as Mickey mentioned. And we're encouraged also in 2026, we could see an increase in that.
Shifting to LP secondaries, David, volume reached about $120 billion in 2025, and our market report shows they've become really a core tool for LPs. How are institutions approaching liquidity, and how are they viewing secondaries in the broader context of their GP relationships and their portfolio management?
I think it usually starts with a catalyst. And the catalyst is, for example, a need for liquidity. That was the case back in the GFC, where LPs were told, you're going to have to generate liquidity, otherwise you're going to default on your capital calls. It might be a new team coming over saying, I want to make room for new relationships in my portfolio. And the only way to do that is to trim some other relationships. That's usually the first element for a new LP to come to the market. Now, once they've gone through that first sale, they realize that it's actually not as hard as they anticipated. And they switch from being reactive, being told you're over allocation, you need liquidity, new team, to actually saying, this is a tool I can use in my portfolio. And they move from that type of first sale focused on maybe older funds, non-core relationships, to generating liquidity across their relationships, maybe selling partial strips of core relationships so they can redeploy into newer funds managed by the same GPs. Half of our clients today are repeat sellers. So they started through that catalyst and are now using that tool. Some of them use that tool several times a year, which is a new phenomenon. So that's been fueling some of the growth on the LP side.
Thanks, David. Turning to GP-led secondaries, Ryan, in a muted environment for PE exits, continuation vehicles have become a key source of liquidity. How have they evolved in recent years, and how do you expect this market to continue to develop?
Yeah, it's been an incredibly exciting time in the GP-led market for a couple of reasons. One, the buyout strategy and growth equity to a lesser extent has really been at the forefront of the trend. And so over a number of years, you've seen the percentage of distributions coming back to LPs being driven by continuation vehicles really accelerate. I think last year our estimate is roughly 15% of distributions going back to investors. But if you look at other asset classes, credit, infrastructure, et cetera, that number is sub 5%. And so the use of the tool continues to broaden. And the same development trends that we've seen in buyout and growth equity, I think we expect to continue in other strategies. I think in addition to that, you know, we used to spend a ton of time educating sponsors on what is a continuation vehicle. I would say that meeting agenda has changed in a material way from what is a continuation vehicle to, you know, how do I best deploy a continuation vehicle within my portfolio? So sponsors, almost irrespective of whether it was the prior exit environment or what we expect to be a more favorable exit environment for sponsors going forward, I think the toolkit is widely known and sponsors aren't thinking about, you know, do I just sell this company? They're thinking about what is the best thing for the company, my investors, my fund, et cetera. And so continuation vehicles as an option is front and center for a number of sponsors. So it's certainly, you know, leagues ahead of where it was even a couple of years ago.
Just a quick follow-up there. You spend a lot of time with GPs and with buyers. What resonates with buyers, you know, in terms of a continuation vehicle being a good opportunity?
Yeah, look, in the buyout space in particular, which is still predominantly where the volume is being driven from, you know, I think buyers first and foremost are looking at assets in portfolios that are the top quartile of performers for a sponsor, where you know, the investment thesis going forward is largely a continuation of the success they've had in the past. So generally still backing the same management team, consistent end market that has a decade long, if not longer, you know, positive tailwinds behind the space broadly. And then a business that is has a proven ability to kind of win within its market, take share. But in addition to that, I think the bulk of the capital has largely been focused on a similar opportunity set. So businesses valued between 10 and 20 times EBITDA, you know, sectors that folks know well. I think one of the exciting things that we see going forward that has started to happen even today is further specialization, right? Into, you know, growth equity businesses, maybe higher valuation, higher growth businesses, minority stakes, et cetera.
I think maybe one thing to add on to that is the biggest growth we've seen in the secondary market on the GP side has been in private credit. So Ryan was talking about buyout as being the biggest part, and which is still the case. But private credit secondaries has grown twice the level of the market last year. So that is an exciting part. And Evercore, we're very focused on that with a dedicated team and, you know, market leadership in its early stages. So we see that exciting. Also, infrastructure secondaries, which was less of a thing a few years ago, has now become much more important.
I think one of the effects as well on LPs of the growth of the GP-led market is a shift from being an allocator to being a more sophisticated investor, as you need to make a decision in those situations. LPs used to allocate and then defer to GPs to make all the calls in terms of when to exit and sending back the capital. Now with the growth of GP-led secondaries, they're given that option to potentially take the liquidity or roll. And what I've noticed is a sophistication level of LPs have increased, where they are looking into their portfolios, so they're ready to react.
Super helpful. So we've looked back. Let's look forward a little bit. Nigel, despite record deployment in 2025, dry powder remains substantial, and significant capital is expected to be raised in the near term. As we head into 2026, how should markets think about capital availability, and what are the implications for competition, pricing, and execution?
Yeah, I think the bottom line is there's capital available in this market. So an LP or a GP who wants to execute a transaction, there's capital available. I think our survey, which has just come out, showed more than $200 billion of available capital. And in addition, we're finding lots of new entrants coming in. So we feel the capital amount available is going to continue, maybe increase. However, I think the caveat is we see this still as an undercapitalized market, and the secondary market generally is still around 2% of embedded private markets assets under management. So in the context of a secondary market, it's still small, but there's capital available. So you know, we still see it as a huge opportunity going forward. And you know, I think my answer on pricing is still robust for LPs, and you know, David may comment on that a little bit. But we feel that the market is strong, but there's still roughly 1 year of available capital.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the market's well capitalized, but the market's raising and deploying in real time, and it's not like there's 3 years or 4 years of available capital, meaning that conditions, the solid conditions we have right now, could change overnight. And so pricing, while pricing is very strong today, it could dip pretty fast.
Ryan, any impacts on the GP-led market?
Look, I would say the largest impact on the GP-led market isn't necessarily capital availability. It's the check size and the concentration of capital within certain firms that are specialized in an investment type. You know, we used to have continuation vehicles of really all sizes that potentially could have elongated timelines because we would have to call hundreds of investors to syndicate those. And really, a transaction south of $1 billion of capital raise, you can do pretty efficiently on an M&A timeline in a way that wasn't possible a couple of years ago. You know, because of the statistic Nigel mentioned of roughly a year of dry powder to market volumes, when you start talking about transaction sizes of $1 billion, $2 billion plus, you know, you still have the risk of an elongated timeline. But I'd say for the most part, the ability for investors to write larger checks in concentrated situations has probably been the largest single impact on the GP-led market, which is a little bit different than on the LP side.
Yeah, I think on the LP side, we can do now transactions up to $6 billion. And I recall not too long ago where if a transaction was north of $1 billion, you had very few buyers. So that bar keeps going higher.
Great. Final question, maybe 30 seconds from each of you. As we begin 2026, what's the most important trend you're watching and why does it matter to the secondary market? I guess we'll start with you, Nigel.
I think for me, it's the growth of wealth management and the retail channel and the, in a sense, the democratization of private markets, which we see in real time. It matters to the secondary market because a lot of that capital needs to be deployed immediately, and secondaries are a great way to deploy that capital.
David? For me, it's really the buyer's ability to execute on their fundraising plan in 2026 because the dry powder at the start of this year is the same amount as the one at the start of last year. And we even went to a dip last year. We started at 215 or so, went to 170, went back to 215. And right now buyers are trying to raise over 2x what they were trying to raise last year. The ability to execute on that will have a meaningful impact on the growth of the market.
Brad?
On the GP side, I think it's this trend of specialization. We used to have the same 10 phone calls for every transaction that we would work on. And depending on who the manager is, what the asset does, what sector it spends its time in, I think your investor universe, you know, may change in the continuation vehicle world in a way that is much different than just the same 10 or 20 groups being invited to each process. And so making sure that, you know, we're on top of, you know, who has capital, what investors are focused on, and how they plan to deploy that capital is, you know, a change in the market that's, you know, pretty meaningful.
I know I said final question, but one more. Ryan mentioned specialization. Beyond what we are currently seeing in the market, where do you guys see specialization going in the next 1 to 5 years? Nigel, we'll start with you.
I'll kick it off. I think the growth of the private credit secondary market is going to be very notable, and it could, you know, it could get close to where private equity is, certainly a few years ago.
I think you're going to have to see specialization on sub-strategies within LP secondaries. And I'm thinking venture, for example. You have a lot of capital being allocated to venture sitting in NAV where you need specialized buyers. I think more specialized buyers need to come in that market.
Yeah. The solution set that the secondary market brings to LPs and GPs is no different across strategies. So in my mind, there's not a strong reason why the percentage of distributions going back to LPs and buyout from secondaries shouldn't be in the same zip code, at least for other strategies. So private credit's one, but infrastructure, venture, et cetera, I think, yeah, will follow suit.
Thank you. This has been a great discussion on the secondary market and how it's scaled, how it's being used as a strategic portfolio tool, and what that means as we look ahead to 2026. Thank you, Nigel, David, Ryan, for sharing your perspectives. And thank you all for listening. Be sure to subscribe to Evercore Edge wherever you get your podcasts. We look forward to continuing the conversation in our next episode.
Copyright 2026, Evercore. All rights reserved.